Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Earlier this morning in Accra, the Vice President of the Republic, His Excellency Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia, called the former president and now president-elect, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, on phone to congratulate him for winning the election.
Ghana's Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia promises to work towards a smooth power transition after conceding defeat to former President John Dramani Mahama.
It has been a demand by the people of Zambia that they are able to see through television in other countries where cases of public interest are broadcast live.
Zambia's Constitutional Court ruling to be broadcast live on Tuesday.
That should be done in the courts of judicature, not in the military kangaroo military tribunals. It should be done in the competent courts, not kangaroo tribunals, even if it were true.
And the defense lawyer for opposition figure Dr. Chisa Besigye files a contempt of court petition against the military and attorney general at a Ugandan high court. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Incumbent Ghanaian Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia has conceded defeat to his main rival and former President John Dramani Mahama in the just-ended general election. The concession means former President Mahama will take over power from outgoing President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, who is set to exhaust the legal limit of 2 full terms. In his concession speech broadcast on media platforms, the vice president promised to work hard to ensure a smooth transfer of power. Ghanaians voted on Saturday to choose a new president and parliament. Viewer's Pauline Dio is on assignment to cover the elections in Ghana. He joins us from the headquarters of former President Mahama's National Democratic Congress, or NDC party. Hello, Paul. What is the mood at the NDC party headquarters in Accra?
The mood is that of excitement, joyfulness. Every single person here is so happy, so excited to the fact that their president-elect John Dramani Mahama is going to go back to Jubilee House again. Nobody thought that this was going to happen. Shortly after Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia conceded defeat, people started trickling in, coming to the NDC headquarters. As you can hear in the background, there is like 10,000 people here. Motorcycles are all over the place. It's crazy.
Some people are saying that the concession speech shows how Ghana's burgeoning democracy appears to be flourishing. What is your take after speaking to people on the ground, in the streets, and particularly in parts of Accra that you visited?
I could not agree more. I think Ghana has led by example and continues to lead by example. I was watching the press conference live. Unfortunately, we were unable to make it there in time because they gave us a 30-minute notice that the vice president was going to concede. So by the time we were trying to get there, he was already talking. But to hear him say the words that I concede defeat to my opponent, and I'm calling on all my supporters to do the same, was something that you don't usually hear when it comes to African politics.
What about the issue of transition? Because I also heard the incumbent vice president concession speech that he was going to be part of the process to ensure a smooth transition. Can you talk to us about it?
Absolutely. He said that NDC has won decisively. No question about it. When you look at their own internal polling, you look at how they have performed in parliament and at the presidential level, there is no question about it that NDC has won decisively. And therefore, he wanted to extend his hand to say that, listen, you beat us, but I'm willing to work with you and I'll do everything possible to make sure that the transition is smooth. And he also encouraged his supporters to follow suit, and therefore all his staff to help the other party when it comes to identifying out a thing of transition. Can you, that's fine, what? Yes, yeah, yeah. So, as we are talking right now, there is a lot of excitement here, fireworks. Initially, I thought it was bullets, but people are not running. So, it's just fireworks.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul, and enjoy your afternoon.
Okay, thank you.
Viewers, Paul Indio is on assignment to cover the elections in Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Ghana's Information Minister Fatih Abubakar says Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia is determined to work towards a smooth power transition. This after the Vice President called former President John Dramani Mahama via telephone to concede defeat before making the announcement public at a press conference in the capital, Accra, on Sunday. For more reaction following the defeat of the governing New Patriotic Party presidential candidate and Vice President, I reached Information Minister Fatih Abubakar. She is also a spokesperson for the NPP presidential campaign team.
Earlier this morning in Accra, the Vice President of the Republic, His Excellency Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia, called the former president and now president-elect, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, on phone to congratulate him for winning the elections according to our own internal coalition results. And that is the case because His Excellency the Vice President Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia is committed to ensuring that there is peace before, during, and after the election, and his own posturing and comments will go a long way to de-escalate tensions and also make sure the good people of our country and the world know that Ghana today is an indisputable beacon of democracy, not only for its own citizens, but also on an African and Pan-African scale.
I also understand the Vice President called on his supporters to be calm, accept defeat, and support the incoming administration. He also said that he is committed to working to ensure a smooth power transition. Talk to me about that.
Absolutely. That is correct. We want Ghana to succeed. We want Ghana to do well. And we have shown over the period that it's a contest of ideas and showing our policies and giving the good people of our country the opportunity to choose their leader. But when that decision is made, even in opposition, we are supposed to be constructive. We don't have to criticize just unnecessarily. Make sure our comments, our utterances, are all towards the development of our beautiful country.
So as the information minister and a spokesperson for the Bawumia, the Vice President presidential campaign, what is the message to, one, your supporters, and two, to the people of Ghana following this election?
Okay, first of all, our message to our supporters has been simple. As delivered by His Excellency, the Vice President and our flag bearer, we lost a battle, not the war. We always have an opportunity to regroup, to re-energize our base, motivate them, do post-mortem, know exactly what went wrong in this election, and set out to correct them so that by the grace of God, in the 2028 presidential election, the New Patriotic Party, whoever our leader may be, will come strongly. So that is actually the message. So for the rank and file of the party, they are calm. I can assure you that some are even excited. People have moved on so quickly. And it happens in other parts of the world. So sometimes we are concerned that some people are of the impression that it is an African election and it must be chaotic at all costs and people must cling to power at all costs. That is not the story of Ghana. That is not our image. And we are dedicated to ensure that we uphold our democracy, and the people have spoken, and we have accepted that decision or the verdict of the people. So our party people are okay. They are just preparing towards what lies ahead to be a very responsible opposition and reorganize our party properly for future elections.
Fatih Abubakar is Ghana's information minister. She spoke with me from the capital, Accra.
As we commemorate this year's Human Rights Day, we reflect on the 2024 international report from the NGO Equality Now that finds continued gaps in family laws in many African countries. On the next episode of Our Voices, we discuss laws in areas ranging from marriage, inheritance, and more, and look for solutions to keep women and girls from a life of disadvantage and despair. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
In Zambia, the permanent secretary at the Information Ministry says citizens have been demanding the broadcast of a judicial ruling of national importance to the nation. Thabo Kawana rejects accusations that the planned live broadcast for the Constitutional Court ruling scheduled for Tuesday is aimed to prevent former President Edgar Chagwa Lungu from challenging President Hakainde Hichilema in the next general election. His remarks follow demands by citizens for the broadcast of court rulings that are of national importance. It prompted the Chief Justice to pave the way for the live broadcast of the coming ruling. For more on the live broadcast, I reached Thabo Kawana.
It has been a demand by the people of Zambia that they are able to see through television in other countries where cases of public interest are broadcast live on television channels. You remember that even in South Africa, when they were dealing with the Oscar Pistorius case, it was live and we were able to follow it through even here in Zambia. And the media and other stakeholders had petitioned the judiciary that they ought to live up to that kind of standard to allow that we are able to see such cases live on television because they are of major public interest. So the judiciary has only responded to the demands of the people and various stakeholders, and the Chief Justice has been gracious enough to allow that now the media can be allowed for specific cases to be able to broadcast live.
Now, what do you make of the accusations being leveled against the government that the government wants to prevent the former president from running, and that is why they are using the court to broadcast to the whole nation that indeed he is not qualified to run for the next election, and that is why the government wants it broadcast live?
Well, that is highly laughable. I mean, look, the matter is before the court of law, and we all are anticipating a judgment for or against, and nobody knows what the court will be able to say. So there are people that are of the school of thought that the man is qualified to run for office again, and there are also others that are saying he is not qualified, he's already held office twice, he's already been sworn in twice, and so on. And the courts are now going to make a pronouncement or a ruling or a judgment towards that. And the whole country is glued so that we all hear what the court will say. What our cynics are scared of is because they have got this behavior where when a court judgment is given, they quickly run to the media and misinterpret the judgment and misquote the judges and misinform the public. But now that opportunity is not there because the whole country, from north to east, from west to south, will be able to follow through live and listen and watch and hear for themselves as the judges pronounce themselves over this matter.
So what should be the expectations of Zambians as the state broadcaster ZNBC will broadcast this ruling live to the nation? Because some of the critics of the government are saying that those who make the ruling, the Constitutional Court, were all appointed by the president or promoted by the president to do his bidding.
The expectation of the nation is that justice will be served. The judges are appointed by the president. It doesn't matter which president. All judges are appointed by the president. All judges that have been judges and that will be judges in the future, even 50 years from now, will still be appointed by the president. So that is neither here nor there, because that is the system. What do the people expect? They expect justice. And is it only ZNBC that is going to broadcast this? No, sir. The entire media spectrum is now free to broadcast because the Chief Justice, as of today, I am aware, that has allowed private media via Prime Television, Diamond Television, Hot FM Media, News Diggers, and other media houses, they have all been allowed, after applying to the Chief Justice, that they too want to broadcast live. So it is not just ZNBC, the national broadcaster. It is the media spectrum across board, meaning both private and public media will be able to broadcast live.
Thabo Kawana is the permanent secretary at the Information Ministry. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Still in Zambia, the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, says it is shocked by the decision of the Chief Justice to allow the live broadcast of the Constitutional Court ruling regarding the eligibility of former President Edgar Chagwa Lungu to contest as a candidate in the next general election. The Constitutional Court is scheduled to make a determination on December 10 on whether Lungu is qualified to compete. The PF says the live broadcast appears to be an effort by the government to publicly preempt the court's ruling that would disqualify the former president, the main rival of President Hakainde Hichilema. The ruling party rejects the allegations as unfounded and without merit. For more reaction to the much-anticipated ruling from the Constitutional Court, I reached Emmanuel Mwamba. He is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, party.
The requirement under our law is that they do not allow live broadcast of court processes in Zambia. There has been calls by many journalists that the courtroom should be opened, you know, especially the public who are interested in these matters. So we're surprised, rather, that this unilateral decision has been made just in regard for the case of the former president. And we are not happy about it because the nation didn't hear the arguments for and against. Would have rather that this process was opened at a stage when both the parties were arguing the case. That's where the public would have been properly informed. But what we know is that this is a psychological strategy to make Zambia accept the adverse decision that the Chief Justice and the Constitutional Court will make. We are aware that there have been strong attempts to bar the former president by reopening this case. You should remember that this case was settled in four separate instances.
So the question a lot of people are asking, I understand, is what has changed that requires this ruling again from the Constitutional Court?
Nothing has changed. Edgar Lungu was a candidate in 2021. There are no new facts. There are no new justification for the Constitutional Court to sit again and hear this matter. Remember, just last month, current president removed three Constitutional Court judges that had ruled against him in the 2016 electoral petition, and that had ruled in favor of Edgar Lungu's standing. So the three Constitutional Court judges were removed. This was an attempt to create a panel of judges that will have one mind in which to ban and bar former President Edgar Lungu from participating in the 2026 election.
But Ambassador Mwamba, this has been denied by officials, including the permanent secretary at the Information Ministry, that nobody knows the ruling and that an individual went to court to ensure that the court determines, probably for the final time, that the accusations, that there are plans to bar the former president from running, for which reason there would be this live broadcast, is again one of the means the opposition wants to drum up to make the government unpopular.
This is the worst kept secret. You can see the action by the state, the decision to broadcast this judgment live, the mobilization of the police to ensure that no one is available at the Constitutional Court and that everyone should stay home and hear this judgment from television stations. So clearly, this is it's a worst-kept secret. They know the outcome. They probably have a copy of the judgment. And we have no hope that this matter can go in favor of justice. It will just go. Sadly, it will be read on the day of International Human Rights Day. And on that day, the Constitutional Court of Zambia will be taking away the right of former President Edgar Lungu to participate in electoral process in Zambia.
Emmanuel Mwamba is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition party, the Patriotic Front, or PF. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Uganda, the defense lawyer for opposition figure Dr. Chisa Besigye has filed a contempt of court petition against the military and attorney general at a Ugandan high court and the East African Court of Justice. Aaron Kiza says there are judicial rulings that the trial of civilians in military courts is illegal. This, he says, was due to two rulings from the Constitutional Court that say civilians cannot be tried in a military court. The Ugandan Human Rights Commission denounced the charges against Besigye and co-accused Obaid Lutale Kamulyeja. This while urging the government to drop the case against them. Appearing in a military court, the two accused were charged with illegal possession of firearms in Kenya, Greece and Switzerland. Both have denied the charges. Attorney Aaron Kiza tells me that the military court lacks jurisdiction to try the case.
The Constitutional Court of Uganda has ruled on two occasions in the recent years, in 2002, in 2022 and 2023, that trying civilians before military tribunals is illegal and it should stop, and the proceedings before such a tribunals are invalid and null and void ab initio. But yet we have seen the military court continually ignore such orders, and we have decided to move, among others, in contempt of court proceedings against the military officials, and we are telling them they are criminals and they should be locked up for doing that.
Who are you targeting in this case?
We are targeting mostly the soldiers, but also the Attorney General has a role to play because he's supposed to be dissuading them from criminality, and so far he has failed to do so.
But the case is that he is accused of planning to threaten the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Uganda. That is why
that should be done in the courts of judicature, not in the military kangaroo military tribunals. It should be done in competent courts, not kangaroo tribunals. Even if it were true, which it cannot be true. They have no evidence. They have just leaked a video of AIA saying nonsense. So, they should know where to take criminals to charge them, and they have not done that. It is not in kangaroo military tribunals.
How feasible is your petition, and do you think the authorities will agree to your stance? Because as it stands now, the trial is proceeding at the military court.
The court orders are very clear, and we expect the Ugandan authorities to respect them. They will expect nothing less. They have signed up to judicial authority, and they should heed it.
When is this petition going to be heard?
The East African Court of Justice is slow, but we expect it to prioritize this because it is a matter of monumental public importance, and also the High Court in Uganda should next week be able to hear us, or the other week. We are not willing to let the military tribunal proceedings continue when they are illegal.
But what do you say to critics of regional courts that countries routinely ignore their ruling, although on paper the ruling is supposed to be binding? The member countries routinely ignore those rulings. So how effective is this case in the regional court?
Not all orders are ignored, and if you, even if they were ignored, the orders would have served their intellectual, doctrinal, academic, and advocacy purposes. It is they would have denuded the authorities who are surveying them of the legitimacy they want to cross their actions with. So, beyond obedience of the court orders, there are other reasons for going to court. This is public interest litigation.
What do you say to critics who say that you are just wasting your time and everybody's time instead of proceeding with preparing adequate defense for your clients who are in the military court? You are, as they say, carrying out a publicity stunt at a regional court.
That is ignorance of the highest order. That is ignorance of the highest order. There is no justice to be dispensed by a kangaroo court. There is no law to be practiced in a kangaroo court, and there is no effective defense you can mount. It all revolves around one man called President Museveni that is using it to punish his political rivals, and we cannot pray to that script.
Attorney Aaron Kiza is the defense lawyer for opposition figure Dr. Chisa Besigye. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. A Rwandan opposition figure, Victoire Ingabire, has been awarded the 2024 Liberal International Freedom Prize. Philip Bennion, vice chair of the Liberal International Human Rights Committee, says the award is given to individuals who fight for liberal values, promoting freedom of conscience, human rights, democracy, the rule of law, and peace. He also says those who receive the award should be contributors to significant changes in a country or region. For more about the award, I reach Philip Bennion.
The prize is an annual prize. We award it this time every year to a prominent defender of democracy somewhere in the world. And usually we select someone for whom we think the prize might help the cause of democracy more generally. So we were in Santiago at the weekend for our annual congress in Chile. She was the recommendation of our Human Rights Committee to receive the award, and the award was confirmed on Saturday. I immediately let her know.
One of the criteria for which reason I understand she was awarded this prize was for liberal values, promoting freedom of conscience, human rights, democracy, rule of law, and peace. But according to her critics, she violated the law so many times in Rwanda, for which reason she faced some of the challenges she faced.
Well, if you actually look at her appeal, and it's a question of whether Rwanda has a free democracy or not. I think that the issue as to whether she has broken laws in Rwanda, if those laws are actually designed to prevent democratic participation, then I think that that's something that we would give some ground over. I mean, our last recipient was given a 22-year sentence under Putin's regime, basically for opposing him. So, and that was Vladimir Karamurza last year. So our key criteria is that they are effectively sticking up for democracy and promoting democracy.
What do you say to those who are of the view that external groups or forces who give award to individuals such as Victoire Ingabire are rather fomenting or encouraging bad behavior instead of encouraging them to abide by the rule of law in their respective countries?
Whether we are external or not is a moot matter. We are a global organization, so we are either external to everybody or internal to everybody. We are a global organization. We have 45, I think, member parties from Africa. We aren't a Western-dominated group that is preaching down to somebody else. This award, we have South Americans, we have from across Asia, we have across Africa. We are a global organisation, so of politicians. So on the basis of being external, I think that is rather a different point. We are an international global organisation, and as far as rule of law is concerned, our view of rule of law is that it supports human rights, it supports democracy, of course we do condemn all violent practices in these terms, but sticking up where you're imprisoned for basically sticking up for the right to stand in elections, whether presidential or parliamentary, if laws are used to prevent people, then those laws need looking at.
Philip Bennion is vice chair of the Liberal International Human Rights Committee. He spoke with me from London. In Kenya, tech entrepreneurs who had trouble accessing resources as simple as an internet connection are getting an assistance from American libraries. The U.S. Embassy in Kenya is now operating 6 tech hubs, the newest of which opened in Nairobi last month. For VOA, Victoria Munga reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Kevin Apodo's efforts to find spaces to develop his programs and skills for human capital consultancy business were futile for years. Apodo says the costs were out of his reach.
I would say it wasn't easy getting a space. Sometimes maybe you're required to rent or to pay or to go to a hotel, and that would be so expensive.
At the American Corner, a hub designed to provide innovators and entrepreneurs with infrastructure and training, Apodo says he found the help he needed.
They act like resource centers, a place where I could just walk in, or I can just walk in and get maybe access to a laptop or free internet or a space to do a program if I have, you know.
6 hubs dubbed American Corner Mtaani, meaning streets in Swahili, have been set up in Kenya, including one at the Kenya National Library Service that opened November 4th. The U.S. Embassy's Regional Public Engagement Specialist Shakaria Baxon says the goal is to provide opportunities at the grassroots level for young innovators to connect, experiment, collaborate, and create.
We have different grant initiatives that we work towards. So right now, this past year, we had an inclusive fashion grant where people got together to figure out how do you make fashion inclusive for persons living with disability, as well as we had a film FUPI grant where people were taught how to create short films in their community.
Experts say a shortage of resources and limited access to funding faced by aspiring tech entrepreneurs in Africa is killing many dreams. Andrew Fasnige is director of the African Tech Summit, a gathering that connects tech startups, corporations, and investors. Fasnige says initiatives that assist Kenyan tech entrepreneurs can pay off for both Kenya and the United States.
When you bring it back to this linkage with the USA embassy, if that can help bridge the USA and Africa and Kenya or Nigeria or Egypt or whichever market it is, that's massive. Because sometimes maybe the technology transfer needs a slight partnership or an introduction.
Government data shows about 20% of Kenyan workers under age 35 were unemployed at the end of 2022. Professor Noah Midamba, a foreign policy expert at the Nairobi's KCA University, says unemployment can be eased through initiatives like the embassies.
If you teach a person how to fish, you know, they can feed themselves better than give them fish. So the relationship we have with America, which goes into supporting a startup company and entrepreneurship environment and creating a structure and education system to be, is what will answer the strategic direction that Kenya needs to be.
Kenya's Mombasa, Lamu, and Nakuru counties are among other locations hosting the American Corners. Officials hope that such initiatives will help to bring more young people's innovations to life. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
As a landmark climate change court case reaches its halfway mark in The Hague, clear divisions have emerged over whether nation states can be held legally liable for damage caused to the global climate system by greenhouse gas emissions. For VOA, Henry Ridgewell has more.
After a week of hearings at the United Nations top court in The Hague, the battle lines are clearly drawn. The 15 judges are being asked to give an opinion on whether international law applies to states' responsibilities to stop climate change and to address the damage caused. Small island and coastal states argue their very existence is at stake, and so international human rights law must apply. Big polluters, they say, must be held responsible. Margareta Wararinka Singh is lead counsel for the Pacific Island state of Vanuatu.
Territories are disappearing. Livelihoods are being destroyed. Fundamental rights are being violated as we speak.
But the big polluters, including the United States, China and India, argue that only global climate change agreements have any legal relevance. Human rights, they argue, don't apply. Luther Rangreji is representing India at the hearing.
In rendering its advisory opinion, the court may exercise due caution to avoid devising new or additional obligations beyond what is already agreed under the existing climate change regime.
Many bigger polluting nations fear the consequences if the court advises that human rights laws do apply to climate change, says analyst Elena Kosolapova.
Under the law of state responsibility, any breach of an international obligation known as an internationally wrongful act entails certain consequences. And many vulnerable countries have highlighted this during the hearings. The responsible state is obligated to make reparations for the injury caused by the wrongful act.
Those reparations could take the form of compensation.
Compensation was explicitly excluded from the loss and damage talks under the convention and from the Paris Agreement itself. So I think it would be very interesting to see what the court has to say about.
The judges will hear another week of evidence before delivering their legal opinion next year. 2025 is shaping up to be a crucial year for climate legislation. In the next few months, nation states must publish details on how they plan to cut greenhouse gas emissions ahead of the November COP30 climate summit in Brazil's Amazonian city of Belém. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, music from our African collection. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Yeah. to your give my no be wife. I am mama, I am mama, to your give my no be wife. If you want to marry you, marry better way, no marry your kimma. If you want to marry you, marry better way, no marry jangala. If you want to marry you, marry better way, make sure know you dey feel. If you want to marry you, marry better way, make sure know where you no get money. If you marry your kimma, when money no there, she go back a lot to go. No matter what day you give her, she no can appreciate you. Time be on your kimma. Even I get more worry, she go begin call mama, she go begin call papa. She go there shout, I don't die your mama. She go there shout, I don't die your papa. Obi do tibo when me, mama. Obi do tibo when me, papa. If he marry better wife, when money no there, she go there better husband. She go there tell her husband, say make him no worry, say money they come. Anything you give her, she go take and manage you. I be better wife. If you not get more worry, she go sing a good song. When go make you happy. Better wife not go the giver. Better wife you know is it to see. Is it one you not food you not ah, I am mama. I am mama. I am mama. Eh. I am mama, oh, I'm obedient. There's a woman, my lobin, Jackene. There's a woman, my lobin, Lele, oh. There's a woman, my lobin, Biairimo, I'm obedient. I'm on my lay. What is that?
Pleasure,
Suman. Yes, in my inner food, the Ananya.
Pleasure, Suman.
Yes, in my inner
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Bob Bass, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, in order to be effective in hunting in the forest, you must stay silent. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa. Emmanuel Adebayor, Madame Mona Foum, Chancel Mbemba.
Peace.